Blog Talk Radio.
What difference if I hail from North or South, or from the East or West? My heart is filled with love for all of these. I only know I swell with pride and deep within my breast I thrill to see, O glory faint, the breeze.
She had a great voice, deep contralto, I would call it.
her birthday today, and here's a birthday we would prefer to forget about, Richard Speck, in which it's a case in which I have a personal connection to someone who survived. There was a connection to my family, there was an infamous video of him having sex with somebody in Joliet State Prison. He survived the. He was not given the death penalty, but just a horrible, horrible case. And of course, the guy was, in my opinion, mentally disturbed for a long time. Unlike John Gacy, another sexual predator, a homosexual predator, who was finally executed in Joliet State Prison, which is Illinois' version of Alcatraz, or not Alcatraz, but San Quentin. And the deaths today, this is interesting, is DuBarry. Madame DuBarry was the mistress of Louis XV, and she was beheaded. I didn't have time to look up more of her history, but there was a famous Bob Hope movie called DuBarry Was a Lady, although he didn't lose his head in that movie. And then great Southern statesman, U.S. Senator, an officer in the American Army, the President of the Confederacy, U.S. Senator representing Mississippi, Jefferson Davis, died today. And then Leadbetty. Now, Leadbetty is very interesting. He was one of the great guitar players, black folk singer. He had a lot of violence in his life, troubled childhood. He didn't know who his real father was. He was involved in a lot of violence and ended up in two prisons. And he got his way out. He sang his way out. The governor of the state liked the song that he made up for him, composed for him, and he got pardoned, I guess, because they didn't have parole in the southern states. Then he got in trouble again in Texas in a similar situation. And, of course, I think it was Bob Dylan who said that Leadbelly was an inspiration that helped him when he was just starting out. He studied Leadbelly's style of music and folk singing, as it was. Then today also, and Leadbelly's, that was his stage name. His full name was Huddy William Leadbetter. So a great black musician and some great recordings around. And we didn't have time, but we'll see what we have in the archives and maybe play a clip in the next show. And then today, thanks to Robert Watson Watt, he invented radar, which has helped the British defeat the Germans in World War II when the Luftwaffe was bombing London and Britain. What the British, Goring, the head of the Luftwaffe, and the second in command in the Nazi government in Germany, he was bombing the British airfields, and then suddenly there had been a night raid on Berlin, and Hitler got pissed off, and so they decided to bomb London. They switched from bombing the British airfields, and which was decimating the RAF, and the radar stations, which tracking the German, the Luftwaffe coming in to bomb Britain. So they switched to bombing London because they figured the Londoners loved their beloved city and they would surrender. But instead they gave the RAF a respite and was able to rebuild and reinforce their radar and to marshal the RAF to defeat the Luftwaffe in the Battle of Britain. There's a famous film out, The Battle of Britain. It's fairly accurate. It's also documentary films on that. And then his great World War II film about airmen on an aircraft carrier at the Battle of Midway with Don Ameche, he died today. And then one of the last of the real journalists, he was an immigrant, a legal immigrant from Scotland, James Ruskin, died today. And then of the events today, and I guess people wish he didn't discover it, Haiti was discovered by Columbus today. And then I mentioned Robert Clive earlier and his relationship with the British East India Company. Now, this is interesting. This has come up with this most stupid proposal by some of these crotch politicians here in San Francisco to ban circumcision. Now, Robert Clive, in his history, the British East India Company required to check to see if the people they were sending there, the males, were circumcised. If they weren't, they were warned. If they weren't circumcised in Britain, if they were captured when they were doing the exploitation of the natives in India, that one of the habits of the practices of the Muslims was, if they found somebody, if they captured somebody who was not circumcised, they did a half a circumcision. That's where the term Christian dog emanates. And so that was required. I don't have the exact wording the way Robert Clive had mentioned it, but we'll bring it up in another period. And also, since we're talking about Warren Hastings, he was the Governor General of India, and he tried to impose or institute British legal practices and British justice because they were practicing Sharia law. And so he, his enemies, the Indians, and his enemies among the British, because he tried to clean up, so he said, tried to establish order and justice in India. He was charged with bribery and corruption, and his was the longest, one of the longest impeachment trials in Anglo-Saxon jurisprudence. It was like 7 years, from 1788 to, I think, 1795. Here again, we have this whole problem. It's not new, this whole business of Anglo-Saxon law, what we call our British law, and where we get our legal traditions and law, is coming into conflict with Sharia law. It's nothing new. It happened back then in India, and we're still fighting with this, fighting these abuses of and human rights violations even today. So people think this is a new trend in this is modern. It's not. It goes back to that period. Excuse me. And also today we had President John Adams, John Quincy Adams, the son of second President John Adams, who was trying to set up the nation's first observatory. And then in civil rights accomplishments and achievements, Harriet Tubman, a black woman, she escaped from slavery and she started to help other blacks who were trying to escape the slavery in the South. And the Underground Railroad, and there's schools named after her and other monuments, and it's a well-deserved recognition of the, her brave efforts to help her fellow human beings. And then we had in South Carolina in 1868, the first black, who was Joseph Rainey, was elected as a member of the House, U.S. House of Representatives from South Carolina. And then I played this last week, but we'll play it again. The first sound recording debuted today, so we'll play it again.
Thomas A. Edison, the inventor of the phonograph, has never before permitted his voice to be recorded for the public. Today, however, he has a message for you that is important enough to cause him to break his long-established rule. Mr. Edison will now give you that message. I beg to introduce Mr. Thomas A. Edison.
Let the remarkable experiments of Morse in 1844 and the unsuccessful efforts of Field in 1858 there have come with incredible rapidity, one electrical art after another, so that in practically every respect civilization has been revolutionized. It is still too early then and pronounce final judgment on their lasting value. But we may surely entertain the belief that the last half of the 19th century was as distinct in its electrical inventions and the results as the first half was in relation to speed.
Mr. The first was I spoke in the original phonograph. A little piece of practical poetry. Mary had a little lamb, its fleece was white as snow, and everywhere that Mary went, the lamb was sure to go.
And that was Thomas Edison, the inventor of the phonograph. We played this earlier this week, so he decided to play it again today since it was supposed to have been invented on this date way back then. And on the other interesting events today, the Washington Post printed its first edition. And, of course, John Philip Sousa wrote a march called the Washington Post March, which is one of his most popular and played most often. And then one of the biggest munitions blasts in a civilian area occurred today in 1917 in Halifax, Nova Scotia, Canada. A French ship called the Mont Blanc exploded. It was a munition ship during World War One. It killed 1,600 people or more, and there were 9,000 Canadians who were injured. I don't think they ever found, discovered, or determined what caused that explosion. About the same time in the United States, in New York, New Jersey, there was the Black Tom explosion, and I think we discussed the German naval officer who was involved, and he fled after successfully blowing up this munitions factory or causing great damage, fled to Mexico, was extradited back here, was court-martialed at Fort Sam Houston and sentenced to death. And in 1922 was President Calvin Coolidge who commuted his sentence, pardoned him, and he went back to Germany as a hero. I was supposed to be a gay sailor, but there's some controversy about that. And then in 1922, I suggest you see the movie Michael Collins. Very accurate. It's about the Irish struggle for independence from Britain. And the Irish Free State was set up, and their constitution was, they started their, forming their constitution and putting it into effect on that date. And then we were talking about Jimmy Hoffa and the Teamsters last week. In 1957, the AFL and the CIO expelled the Teamsters because of alleged and a lot of allegations and accusations about mafia connections. But in 1977, the Teamsters were readmitted. One of the biggest scandals, and they're not talking about it today, and it's affected pensions for the Teamsters, was the Central States was looted by this lawyer whose comeuppance, he was walking out of a restaurant or a courthouse, I forgot which, and he was blown away. He got his karma caught up with him. And then I've said also that it isn't only Roman Catholic priests who molest people, rape people. And Jim Baker, the televangelist, another huckster, raped Janice Kwan, and I think he went to prison for that. And one of the things that I talk about, George Christopher, California's greatest modern mayor, he did run against Ronald Reagan for the governorship, and he lost in the primary. But this was a remarkable man, and before he died, he did all these interviews with him. And today we're hearing from the radical left, ACORN, SEIU, that nonprofits and community organizations are necessary in these cities, and it's going to bring wealth, prosperity, and social justice and all this other BS. But that's not the way it works, and it hasn't worked that way, and it won't work that way. And George Christopher in this interview talks about why the business of a city, why business is so important.
Bringing up the revenues in the place that could alleviate the burden in the outlying area, too.
On the small homeowner.
Well, on the small homeowners, because if we didn't have the redevelopment of Japantown, for instance, which I did, and the redevelopment of the other areas, the Golden Gateway, and also the garages that I built, which sustained the business element downtown. Otherwise, we'd have lost two or three of our major store operators. For instance, let's say, just contemplate for a minute what a disaster would be, let's say if Macy's closed tomorrow. The destruction of that area itself would be reflected in every single home in San Francisco.
Like Cleveland was in the 70s.
Well, so you have to have a combination where the mayor has the goodwill and the confidence of the business community, the investing community. If those two elements don't work together, the city can be in trouble. I recall when I wanted to build the Fifth and Mission garage, for instance, and I had, even then, I had dissidents even for that. And a group came in, they said, no, we're against it. There's a few houses down there, a few this and that, and we're against it. And one fellow got up and he said, the only reason you're doing this is because you want to help the Emporium and I-Magnon and the City of Paris. And I was supposed to get up and deny that, you know. They thought I'd get up and deny it vehemently and say, no, that isn't what I'm doing it for. But I got up and I said, I want to say that you're absolutely right. That's just why I'm doing it, because I want to keep the Emporium and these other department stores active and prosperous, making money and paying taxes. And if we don't do this, we're going to lose them. Well, they were shocked that I agreed with them.
Now, that's helping the above structure. One of the major problems facing this city is deferred maintenance. And then, despite the fact that, you know, as you well know, the bonds seem to, we float them and we never know where they end up. Can you comment on that?
Well, deferred maintenance, I wish Harry Ross was still alive. He could tell you. Because when I went in, it's been a habit of mayors over the years, especially around election time.
Rubber there.
You folks who are in the public realm, I say this to the newspapers and to the radio broadcasters and anybody who's involved, you have to be careful about the bond issues, because if the mayor does not pay attention to the deferred maintenance, then eventually what they do is the assets fall apart, and then they ask for a bond issue. Well, Harry Ross and I had an agreement. I would put in $18 million a year excess in the budget just for the deferred maintenance that had been eliminated in prior years, but still, in the meantime, keep up what's necessary for the present. But to catch up, and in 8 years, say, I put in $160 million practically for deferred maintenance. And deferred maintenance is one of the best opportunities to avoid bond issues. Another thing, too, which I never did at that time, was to take money out of the water department, Hetch Hetchy, and put it in the general fund. Today, they'll take $40, $50 million of the profits of the Hetch Hetchy project in the general fund. In the meantime, the general fund is accelerating. Well, here's what's going to happen someday. Someday, they're going to come with a bond for a bond issue and say, Hetch Hetchy water supply needs $100 or $200 million.
We're getting there.
And we're getting there, yes. You see, this deferred maintenance is something that nobody sees. Nobody understands what it is. It's a hidden enemy. And if you don't keep up with it, you're going to be in trouble.
Well, I'm going to keep talking about it. One of my favorite subjects, as you know, the poor sailor who's in jail is 3 years, no fresh air or sunlight. A kid, Steve Neri, the young sailor who's been accused of killing a politician, was connected to Helen Inn. We brought it up before. But when you built that jail, it was a state-of-the-art jail at the time. I remember you mentioning that you had consulted with the best prison experts, the FBI.
You mean the new...
Yeah, 850, Bryant, yeah.
Oh, yeah, well...
But at that time, you didn't expect people to stay there 2-3 years like they're doing right now, did you?
No. That was a kind of a temporary thing before they went to the higher element.
Mm. Oh, right. Yeah, right.
Yeah.
The big two. Okay. What is the problem with San Bruno? That's another, that's always in the federal courts.
I don't know. You know, you're asking me questions that I'm not aware of. San Bruno, someday somebody will come along and say, we need another bond issue to
right. Well, we've had bond issues, and it never seems to get physically rehabilitated.
Another thing, too, that will come up sometime in the next, I would say, 3 or 4 years, will be Laguna Honda home. And this will be a disaster, because the more it deteriorates, the more you need to rehabilitate it. And Laguna Honda home is a very vital necessity.
What would you say, of course, we didn't get to this one, our previous conversations, but the Muni. I've been to cities, as you have, all around the world, and this is one of the best laid out transportation systems, but one of the worst managed. What would you recommend that they do to get it running efficiently?
You see, the Muni today has more problems, and I hate to say this, but quite a bit of it is due to personnel. And the unions, and I have nothing against the unions, because I worked with them. I never, in my private business, I was there 45 years, never had any trouble. I paid the top wages. I always had a very amicable relationship. But if you give somebody just a little leeway, and you're a little negligent, then these problems multiply. And, for instance, this fellow Cruz that was running the Muni for several years, he's a fine man. I know him quite well. He's a gentleman. He's a fine man in every way. But if I were the mayor at the time when Willie Bond got in, I don't think I would have appointed him as general manager of the Muni. I would have searched around and found out who was available with transportation experience. And, you know, you just can't pick somebody off the street just because you're a secretary, make a general manager out of them, and jump them for $40,000, $50,000 a year up to $160,000.
Well, I think he has an engineering degree.
What?
I think he has an engineering degree from Stanford.
There are a lot of engineers, but they don't know how to run it.
Right.
that's hardly... you need a streetcar operator. That's what you need.
Yeah.
Now we've got another situation where this Booz Allen is going to come in. They're engineers, too. But they've been getting some millions of dollars in the past for their opinions. Well, the opinions don't seem to work.
But they keep getting the millions.
But they keep getting the millions, yes.
One of the other problems I see in a city, and it's close to Rich Disco's in my heart, is the voter fraud. I see more and more voter fraud. I see more and more of it. I have access to the entire state's database through political consultants that I know, and I've seen things. I've even talked to some people who voted fraudulently. It seems that this city is becoming more and more balkanized. You know what I mean? Especially coming from Greece, from that part. What can we do to bring this city together?
Well, that's a broad question. It calls for a broad answer.
You're a politician.
Yeah. But, getting back to what I said at the outset here, there's... Now, my memory goes back to the time when Angelo Rossi was defeated, and downtown at that time wanted to get somebody to take over the mayor's office. Nobody would run. Finally, what did they do? They got hold of Roger Lapham, eminent businessman, no expert. The story to him was, look, we know you do not know how to run the city. We know that. We know that you're not a fiscal expert from the standpoint of running San Francisco. We want you to get in there and be a caretaker until something develops. Raj?
No, it's a little longer interview than we thought, and my mistake, and we will continue with this. Now, all things that George Christopher talks about, although he puts it in the context of San Francisco, applies to most cities across this country. The business community, we've seen it today with the taxes, that fight in Washington where there's a lot of money that businesses have, but they don't know what what's going to happen. So we'll continue with this on Wednesday. So thank you for tuning in, and this will remain in the archives. Good night.